Welcome to After Cana, a Ferris Love podcast dedicated to exploring the vocation of marriage. In each episode, we bring you stories, advice, and insights from experts and seasoned couples to help guide you in your journey, whether you're dating, engaged, or newly married. I'm your host, Gabby Quinlan, and today I am so excited to welcome Renzo and Monica Ortega. Renzo and Monica are parents to five children, Catholic ministry leaders, national speakers, hosts of their popular marriage podcast, To Become Family, and recently published authors of Love Making, How to Talk About Sex with Your Spouse. Welcome to After Cana, guys.
Oh, thanks for having us, Gabby. We're so happy to be here.
So excited to chat with you and, just jump into this really great topic. So tell me a little bit about you two. How'd you get into the Catholic ministry, working with families, working with couples and talking about marriage and all that stuff?
Sure. So it really started with youth ministry. When we were in high school, we had this crazy, wonderful youth minister who put so much love into caring for us. We were the knuckleheads in youth group who were disruptive.
I don't know if you were a knucklehead. I was a knucklehead. Once a teacher's pet, always a teacher's pet.
Okay, so fair.
Me too. Yeah,
that is true. So he was disruptive and I was just challenging in life. Like my life was hard in high school, as every high schooler thinks it is. And she just was so available for us and loved us where we were at. She brought us on a big retreat and we really started to own our faith as our own after that. And so in college, we just came back all the time and was helping her for a while. And then formally got into youth ministry, I guess, as like a paid position, and then got married, and we're still youth ministers. We're still the youth ministers at our parish,
awesome.
And we love teenage knuckleheads because we know where they're at. So we were them.
Yeah.
And then we got into marriage ministry. Honestly, it was our first year being married. We had just connected somehow with the diocesan marriage prep leader, director, I guess. Mm-hmm. And she found out that we practice NFP. And she was like, you are the youngest couple that openly admits that they practice NFP. Will you come and talk about that to pre-Cana classes? So it started as that we came into the diocesan, not to teach pre-Cana because we're not like certified in anything, but just practitioners. We use
that. Yeah, right.
And I can talk, I promise. And and so we started with that, and apparently it's kind of rare for a couple to go and give talks together, and the audiences seem to like the back and forth of the husband and wife, male and female perspective. Yeah. So we started getting more of the day for our pre-Cana workshops in our diocese. And just slowly but surely, we started doing more and more of that.
Nice.
And we got into online ministry. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So we ended up going into online ministry ultimately as a way of keeping in touch with our youth group kids who are now turned young adults, now getting married, and still, originally it was like an idea so that we could keep walking with them in their marriage now. And, you know, they're living, they're parts of the country. If they want to hear from what we would do if we were their age, like we wanted to give that advice and put it out there. But then it quickly became just, it turned the podcast in the ministry turned from that to putting something out there that was honest and vulnerable about what marriage could be like and the difficulties that we had early on in our marriage, and being able to put that out there so that others could hopefully learn from that or feel a solidarity that, like, you don't have everything together, that's okay, that your marriage can still be holy and healthy, especially with the human aspects that we still needed to work on.
Totally. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I was listening to a couple episodes of your podcast, which we will plug this all in the show notes for anyone listening. But To Become Family is the podcast. I personally, as a young married woman, my husband and I have been married for
2 years now. I find it really encouraging to hear from a couple like you guys who I can tell are like still in kind of the thick of it, you know, raising kids and doing all the things that we're doing. And we have one baby girl right now, but it's just encouraging to hear from someone who's like just one step ahead of us, like multiple children, kind of been through that first, like those nitty gritty first like 5 years, you know, where you're figuring each other out. And so I think that's such a great, that was such a great idea, and very accessible for any couple who's just like, man, I feel a little bit alone in this vocation and I don't know what other people are doing or talking about. And I just think that's a really, really great resource for people. So if you haven't checked out their podcast, definitely check it out. I wanted to ask you guys a little bit more about your personal love story. You mentioned going to youth group together, so I'm assuming you started dating in high school.
In high school, yeah.
Dead,
okay,
yes.
Wow. That's so sweet. I love it. Did you guys, was it like love at first sight?
For me, it was.
Were you buddies?
For me, it was.
I love it.
Yeah.
Tell them what you did.
Tell them
oh,
what I did.
No.
So Renzo was hardcore in the friend zone when we were in high school for a while. So it's funny because, so we started going to youth group for two different reasons. While he was the disruptive one in youth group, he was definitely the better Catholic at the time. He was still an altar server and still much more involved in the church, whereas I had made my confirmation and kind of peaced out for a bit. There were some like family issues and I was testing the waters in high school and getting into trouble. So my mom was like, you need to go back to Jesus. You need to go to youth group. So I was forced to go to youth group.
Yeah. Okay.
And Renzo went there more willingly. At the time, there hadn't been a youth group before. Our youth minister was kind of starting it. So we were the pilot kids.
Okay.
And and through that, Renzo and I became very good friends. He fell in love, and I told him all about my different boyfriends and the things I was doing with different boys and all the breakups, and he was the shoulder I would cry on. And
hardcore.
He's like, I'm going to stick it out.
I'm just waiting.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The time will be right.
Yeah.
And it was at the youth conference that just so many things in my life made more sense. And, you know, the sacrament of confession really helps straighten you out. So on the way home from the retreat, I shared my feelings with him, which I just thought were deep, intimate friend feelings. And as I did so, I realized they were love feelings. So we started dating pretty soon after that. And we dated through college and got married just after graduating.
Nice. Oh my gosh, that's so sweet. I mean, really, that's what you want is deep, intimate friend feelings with someone forever. But
yes.
I mean, plus the romance, obviously, but I think that's really sweet. I love that story. So for anyone listening who's, you know, dating or engaged, I know at least for my husband and I, engagement was probably like the trickiest period of our relationship. It's such an in-between, like we're committed to each other, but we're just waiting for this, you know, thing to happen and ready for the next step, but you can't take it yet. What are some challenges that you found in your relationship, you know, dating through college and all of that? What are some things that came up for you, and what do you think couples should be aware of or discuss as they're dating and navigating those tricky seasons?
Yeah, so the dating season into engagement, I think, was tricky for us because there was so much that we were still developing a ton as individuals. So like, not that we're like fully grown humans now. Like I still feel like there's a lot of developing and growing, but early on, like there's just a lot of seasons that you go through, particularly in college, of like. So like year to year, it felt like we were dating a new person. And what was difficult was adjusting to that. And then even in engagement, like we were still our likes and dislikes, though the core of us is still the same. Like, there's just a lot of growth that's happening. And if you're not prepared to grow with the person, you do ultimately end up growing apart. So that was one thing that we stayed committed to is continuing to get to know one another, not feeling like just because we were together for so long, like we had it all together. So that was very helpful to like keep that in mind of like, we're committed to this, let's keep growing. But then even keeping that mindset when we went to engagement of like, this doesn't mean that you're going to stay the same person. Like we're committing to the other person and all their future selves that like they're going to continue to grow. So making sure that we kept that in mind, because then even in marriage, there's still growing that's happening. And to the point that you're like, wow, you feel like sometimes like, man, I thought I knew who this person was, but the reality is like more is coming out. That's what the sacrament's supposed to do. And just, I guess, be encouraged that like, that's okay if you're having trouble with all the changes happening. Like that's part of the process of dating, engagement, and then ultimately getting married. So I know that that's a struggle I think that couples can have nowadays, is just feeling like they want to, like, I picked this person, I want them to stay the person I picked, but like, that's just not how we are as humans.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And then I also think, and this is a continuing to evolve piece of our relationship, but learning that many of our disagreements are not necessarily that we disagree at the core of this situation or this problem or this conflict, but it's also in how we're communicating that. So we actually may be more offended or defensive against the way that it was brought up and how it was communicated, or how I misrepresented or how I misinterpreted, instead of like really at the core having a disagreement of the particular situation. So continuing to learn that, you know, at the person that I'm with, you know, we've chosen one another because we trust one another and we agree on a lot of these core values. And maybe we need to learn how to communicate better, or how to listen better, or how to understand one another better. I think this is particular in engagement. You're now on you're definitely on the same team. You've picked to be on the same team. So starting from that foundation of, we're in this and we're actually entering into this conflict or confrontation because we're on the same team, and it's worth the discomfort to get through it. And so just to continue learning, one, how your tendency is to communicate and to receive, but then also to work on some of those shortcomings that you might have in your communication and in your listening, to be willing to grow and develop in that area.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think communication's obviously one of the most important things you can learn in, honestly, any facet of life, working, relationships, friendships, and definitely with your spouse. For the person who's struggling to communicate their feelings, or for the person maybe who doesn't feel comfortable sharing everything they're thinking or feeling with another person, what would be a piece of advice of like how you can dip your toe into healthier communication?
I would encourage them to first develop the skills within themselves to understand all the things they're feeling. Like one I've had a debate with some people about the Inside Out 2 because in Inside Out 2 they introduce a new emotion, anxiety, and I've argued with people, and I don't know how listeners feel about this, but I don't think that anxiety is an emotion, because like a lot of times like that it's actually a catch-all. It's kind of like the IBS of the emotional system. Like it's just a catch-all of like, are you, because I think our daughter said like, I'm feeling anxious after she watched this movie. I was like, all right, well, are you afraid? Are you nervous? Like, and I started listing other, excited. Are you excited? So I listed a bunch of other emotions that they could, you can call anxiety, but if you can go a little bit deeper and figure out like, no, I'm actually afraid of something, or I'm actually excited about this. And I think for a lot of us, if we don't, we can't articulate our emotions well, if we actually don't fully know what we're feeling or why we're feeling it. So I think journaling could be really helpful for that, of just being able to unpack everything that you're feeling. Because I think once you understand yourself, and like, I know we in our marriage now, so like we're married 12 years, I can tell Monica, like, I'm upset because of X, Y, Z. And when you said this, it reminded me of that. And like, I can lay that all out there. So then she can really, like, then she could take a step back, really listen, digest all the things, be like, okay, this is what you're expecting from me. Versus earlier in our marriage, I'd be like, I didn't like that you did that. And right. that would be it. And it would just be a lot of argument because, but why? Right. Yeah, so it'd just be a lot of arguments. So getting to know yourself so that you could articulate yourself better is a good, helpful skill, I think.
Yeah. Not that we would necessarily recommend all of her work, but Brené Brown was very helpful in helping us to understand vulnerability, like the good and the benefits of vulnerability and the idea of shame. And also within some of her work, she actually like laid out, I think it's like 3 or 4 pages in her book of different feelings and like,
oh, interesting.
It's like a list. Yeah. It's just a running list of different feelings. And to the more specific you could get in describing, the better the person that you're communicating with can understand you. So that was really helpful for us for a while to hold on. I'm actually going to go to the list and pick the one just to help. I think for me too, we kind of at our baseline communicate very differently. Renz is more of an external processor and I'm more of an internal processor. So he'll say things out loud, even if it's not necessarily his full committed thought. But like as it comes in and as he's processing and thinking about it, it comes out of his mouth. And then for me on the opposite end, I stew over things and I say I'm much more intentional with what I want to say, but it also then takes me more time to get there.
Right.
So one thing I think that we learned is to preface both sides, to just be like, I'm just going to talk for a little bit. Please don't be offended because I'm not really sure that I really believe everything I'm saying, but it has to come out for me to think about it.
Yeah,
and then me to be like, okay, I'm going to take that then. I'm going to take you because I trust you. We've grown in that trust. I'm going to trust that like what you're saying is just to help you get there. Mm-hmm. And then for me to communicate, I'm not ready to talk about this yet. I will and like give kind of a deadline, but to just allow one another like at your, to not change who you are, but to be better at who you are. So, you know, I have to sit and think about this. I'm going to go take a shower. I'm going to go take a walk. You know, the kids are too crazy right now. After dinner, when they settle down, we'll put on a show and we'll go talk about it or what have you. So I think prefacing our communication so that the other person knows this is important, but it might not go pretty.
Right, right. That's great. Yeah, I love that advice. And then on the vein of communication, but kind of shifting into your book, which is about communication, but in a very intimate setting, obviously. So the book is called Lovemaking, How to Talk About Sex with Your Spouse. First of all, I just wanted to read a line from one of the Amazon reviews just to encourage anyone who's listening, like, what the vibe of this book is. So one reviewer wrote, this book is accessible, relatable, and authentically Catholic and Christ-centered. From what I've seen of you guys, that's spot on. And so just encouragement for anyone who's like on the fence about buying the book, check it out. So tell me about what motivated you to write this book and what's your intended impact? How do you hope this will help couples communicate about sex, which is so important and integral in marriage?
I think so as far as primary motivator, through our podcast and it kind of growing in popularity, it's very odd to kind of self-promote, but it has to be done so people can buy the book. So as people just started to pick up on, like, we are not trying to come across as experts. We do not have some special background in communication or psychology or sociology. Mm-hmm. We also don't have Renzo has a theology background, but like we don't have this professional background. Our hope and our goal, even in starting any of this stuff, was to just prompt good conversation between couples. Mm-hmm. So like, here's the thing that we have experienced and we didn't really know who to talk to about it, to try to navigate it.
Right.
So hopefully you hearing that somebody else has gone through something, and it's not going to be exactly like your situation, but has gone through something similar. Mm-hmm. And we kind of just are showing you how we've muddled through that and talked through that. And here are some tools that we picked up along the way. Here's something that we learned along the way to help strengthen that conversation, help it make it more fruitful. Mm-hmm. The topic that was always responded to most were when we posted topics about sexuality and intimacy and things like that between spouses. So it seemed to be something that people were like, oh my goodness, I didn't know how to start this conversation. There's a lot of really good books out there for the morality of married life, and they're wonderful. Thanks be to God they exist. And there's a lot of faithful Catholics who go into marriage and they're like, I want to do this right.
Yeah.
But who do I talk to about the specifics of like, what does that look like on Wednesday?
Yes, like, exactly.
Like, what is that like after kids come? And what is, I get the church rules, but blank. Or, oh, that sounds so wonderful and pleasurable and exciting, but our experience is not that. It just doesn't seem to be adding up. Why? And how do I tell the other person that?
Yeah. Without hurting feelings or.
Without hurting feelings or yes. And to receive that and not feel shame, right? And things like that. So our real goal was to not necessarily solve everyone's problems, but to give them a safe space to start talking about it. And maybe every chapter ends with several conversation starter questions. So maybe you're uncomfortable or worried about bringing something up yourself. You can blame the book and be like, I read a book and they brought up this question and it made me think, what do I think about this? What do you think about this? So hopefully to kind of break the tension a little bit and to offer, to offer that space to have the conversation.
I think another thing that's unique about the book is that we include our personal stories in there, and they're not glory stories all the time. Like, they're not just testimonies of like how Jesus fixed everything, but it's a lot of just our struggles that we put in there. And we authentically and honestly wrote about the struggles we had earlier in our marriage, because I think they're not unique to us, and we wanted to give people solidarity. Again, like, you're reading the book and it's like, okay, they know me because they're experienced the same thing. So like, at least whatever they're going to speak to, they know this experience that I'm having. And then also, so like, there is solidarity there. And then also showing that like, and you can still stay married and you can still have a good marriage and a healthy sex life. Like, it's not the end just because things are really hard right now. Because I do remember being in that and really thinking that, like, this is awful. I can't believe this is what it's like. So a lot of that goes into the book as well.
Yeah, that's so good. I think so many couples need to hear that. Thank you guys for being so vulnerable and sharing. So just getting into this conversation, why is sex such a difficult topic between spouses? What are kind of barriers to having those conversations in the first place, in your opinion? And I mean, from what I've seen and experienced, I think there's a lot of expectations based on the culture and movies and even just anecdotal things from other people. And I think there's a lot of shame surrounding conversations about sex in general. Why is this communication so challenging for couples, do you think?
Yeah, I think part of the challenge with this conversation is truly how like intimate, like really, it's a very naked conversation about naked things, right?
So true.
And I think that's really where it is, because it's where human experience and your spirituality collide. Like, the two are inseparable. However, you need formation in both for the fullness of the act to really meet its climax, you know, no pun intended, but like they go so intricately together. However, usually our human formation in this area is at least different from one experience to the, you know, husband to the wife and wife to the husband. Our backgrounds in that are probably going to be different, whether it's experience or how we came across this topic in the first place. Some of us had no sex talk from our parents. Some of us had really horrible, awkward ones. Some of us, our parents were really great at being like, we're here to talk about this and we're available. Some of us have been wounded by purity culture. A lot of us have been wounded by the outside culture. Movies, TV make it seem like this is great. And then it's so wonderful. You just like stay in bed and you never move. And then you wake up in the morning and you're like, wait, that is not how it goes.
Not at all, especially when you have kids.
Oh, my goodness. So, so there's so many different things. And then you're bringing that with another person.
Yeah.
And then there's the very real spiritual reality of two becoming one flesh and what that really means in your sacrament. So do you know that? Have you been catechized and evangelized and do you understand that? Okay, maybe in your head you understand that, but does your heart understand that? Does your soul understand that? And so there's... it's all of that put together.
Yeah.
You know, plus technique and plus timing and plus all the
practice.
Things. So there's there's so much. So I think that's where it's almost like it should be a little bit challenging.
Right.
And but part of us is like, but it's one of the most natural things in the world. It should be so easy. So I think part of it is this like, oh, my goodness, it's not coming as natural. So I feel like, is it me? Is it us? Mm-hmm. And things like that. And then why is it kind of taboo to talk about? Well, and I think part of it is like, well, I don't want to be raunchy like the whole world.
Right.
And say these things out loud or maybe use like proper terminology or things like that, because that. Is that dirty? Am I allowed to say those things? So withholding that prevents opportunity to really understand what your spouse is saying. Because kind of like going back to this is how I feel. And I'm going to use the specific word so you really know. You're a little bit like, am I allowed to say that body part out loud? Can I give direction? You know, and things like that. So I think, it's a whole lot. And so hopefully this book kind of gives you a little pieces to grab onto to maybe start a conversation about.
Yeah. How do you dive into those conversations on a very practical level?
So one question we think that all couples should ask, whether they're engaged or newlyweds or, and there's different degrees of this question, I suppose, but you can start by saying, can you relax in a mess? Like, can you
kick
back?
That's a really good one. Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, no, I'd prefer things to be tidied up and then I can turn off and relax.
My husband Lorenzo, just he's like, turns off everything around him and he's like, we can clean tomorrow, you know? Yep.
So answering that question allows you to understand how can one or both of you get turned on. Because you have to be able to like turn off to enter and just be fully present to the person in front of you. So for me, it's very hard if I know that there's like a checklist to do or the bedroom is a mess or what have you to fully be present in that moment. And so if you're coming from two different perspectives on that, it's hard to understand one another. Well, why can't you really just be here with me? Like the moment is fine. And like, let's just be romantic and be intimate. And you're like, wait. And so sometimes you think that's a personal thing and it's not about you. It's about me. For sometimes that for me means I have to ignore it and I have to choose that.
Right.
And other times it's for Renzo to say, okay, I'm going to pick up some of the load and help make this happen so that you're more comfortable. So I think just that question, can you relax in a mess, will then unfold a deeper understanding of where's your mind at in moments like this.
Right.
Yeah. And I think like piggybacking off of that, even asking the question, like, what are you hoping to, I wouldn't say what are you hoping to get out of sex, but like, what's your aim when engaging with your spouse?
Right.
Because I think that getting to the core of like, are you becoming one to be close to one another, to get closer to one another, or is the other person being used in any way? Like, aware of like, are you more aroused when you've had a very stressful day? Are you looking for sex when like things have just been really hard? Mm-hmm. Or did like when you're stressed, if you have a very stressful day, like does your sex drive completely shut off? Like just knowing yourself again, like back to like the kind of the journaling thing I was saying earlier, but like understanding like what drives you to pursue your spouse so that you're aware of like, hey, if you're like in our marriage, like I would pursue at times that weren't ideal. And recognizing that in myself and be like, you know what, I shouldn't be pursuing right now because these things are happening in our lives. Monica has this on her plate. Right now it's a very selfish time to be pursuing. Just being aware of those things, I think going into a conversation help a lot. And even just bringing that up in a conversation, like, can we both discuss what we're pursuing here? Because we may not be pursuing the same thing. And that's why we just feel so disconnected.
Yeah. Yeah. I think too, also being comfortable saying like, I know you've got a lot going on. I really feel distant from you and I really need to connect with you in this way. Like, I know you're not feeling it, but like, can we make it happen in the next couple of days or like something like that, I think is something we've had to do just with stressors mm-hmm. of life and mm-hmm. Different circumstances come up. But I think just having that, you know, kind of courage to say where you're at on either side and just be really open with your communication can really, really help. Speaking of stress, how can couples navigate stress, whether it's, you know, work, parenting, medical struggles, you know, all of that kind of stuff? How can people navigate that in regards to their, you know, sexual relationship or even just intimacy in general? How can couples strive for intimacy regardless of what's going on in their lives?
Sure. I think, again, going back to think about where is your baseline? So when mm-hmm. you're in stressful situation, is your tendency to withdraw and to move away from, or is it to find an outlet like mm-hmm. that is separate from the stress? So knowing that first is really important for you, because am I over pursuing or am I under pursuing? And for some, that'll be, again, for the example coming from me, so I can speak from my experience, is that there are times where I'm then going to have to choose, because we are so stressed and because things are kind of chaotic, I'm going to have to choose to prioritize intimacy, because that mm-hmm. really is more important than some of the things that are happening. And again, it's like analyzing what's really happening too. But is a certain amount of time with my spouse, just he and I, is that really going to like negatively affect all the stress?
Right.
Probably not. And so I should choose to prioritize our marriage and prioritize our connection. And I'm going to end up enjoying it, right? Like, that's also part of it. Like, it's going to be a good for my marriage. And then for the other, if you're not like me, maybe saying, you know what, this might not be the best time. How else can I pursue intimacy and connection with my spouse that is mm-hmm. outside of sex? Can I do acts of service? Can I carve out time so that they can have alone time and to decompress? And I'll take the brunt of the kids or the house chores or whatever and give them a break. So all of these, like, as long as I'm, how can I love the other in this time of chaos and not make this about me? Mm-hmm. Then you're working in the right direction.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think also to that point, when you are thinking of the other and doing things that, you know, like, okay, this is really me serving my spouse right now. I think the sexual intimacy can often come from that really easily too. So for example, your husband takes, you know, the kids and sends you out to go on a walk or work out or get coffee by yourself or read a book. And then you come back refreshed and like wanting to connect with him and, mm-hmm. you know, feeling just replenished, I guess, in a different way. And so that it all, we're obviously, we're whole people. So everything plays on each other. So I think that, that's really helpful to think about too. So I know you guys kind of mentioned this, kind of matching each other's energy or having mismatched energy in regards to, you know, wanting to be intimate. How can couples talk about that? And how can people basically say what they need or, you know, say what they'd like without, you know, hurting feelings or breaking trust and that kind of thing, or using their spouse? Like,
what do you think?
So
I was thinking.
Yeah, I know you were thinking. So one thing that we, another, so a lot of how we've been able to develop our communication better has been by learning different vocabulary. Again, going back to this Brené Brown list of feelings, external and internal processing. And that was a new, we had never heard of that before marriage. But then in learning that, we're like, oh, that helps me understand you and helps me understand myself. We also learned about these two terms, spontaneous and responsive arousal. Mm-hmm. Spontaneous arousal is people that are experience arousal much more quickly. They can just be ready when they're ready.
Yeah.
And then responsive arousal is more in response to pursuit or in response to stimuli or situation and kind of the mood being right, you might say.
Right.
So, and I think a lot of people get that confused with sex drive, like a lack of sex drive versus a high sex drive. And they're different because the two are still talking about like how you then are prepared to enter into sexual intimacy. So in having that and in learning that, it wasn't like one has a lack of interest and one has extra interest. It's just in how quickly that interest perks up.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. I've never heard it described like that. That's super helpful.
So that was helpful for us because it wasn't so much like, well, you never and you always. It was just, it looks different. And so sometimes there was the like, okay, acknowledging that Monica has responsive arousal, I'm gonna try to set the stage a little bit better, and I'm gonna be prepared for this to take a little bit longer,
right?
So that we can both be ready and able to enjoy, and then to also not take offense to like you are aroused more quickly, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're also lusting. It could just be like you just got there faster than I did. And that's okay too. So having those two new words for us was a good way to like use those words to communicate then, you know, like, I want to be ready, but I'm not ready yet.
I'm not quite there. Yeah.
Or, you know, and like, okay, I see that you're excited and I'm so glad, like I'm flattered and I'm glad and like things like that. And it took the finger pointing away, I guess. So to
speak. Right. Yeah.
And like the spouse that's not a certain, like if both spouses are just have different energies, like you said, or just one's spontaneous and one's responsive, like for the spouse who's spontaneous, it could seem like, I don't understand what you're talking about. Like, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. And just, it feels like you're the person of a different world. And so that's okay. Yeah. And like, just understanding, like, they just don't work the same way that you do. There's nothing wrong with them. No one's broken. It's just, you're two different individuals. You're very unique. And that's just something that, like, so you chose that. Like, you want a person that's different from you. And just being okay with that. I think that's a big thing that, at least from my perspective, I needed to get to just be okay that, like, things aren't going to work just the way that I want them to. Because Monica's her own self.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think just having no expectation. I mean, it sounds bad. Just having like no expectations, which is nearly impossible to do. But I think, yeah, a lot of people just put a lot of pressure on the other person to, like you said, respond the way they would respond or get there at a certain pace. And I think ultimately, you just have to, recognize, like, We are two imperfect people striving for a perfect relationship. There's going to be bumps. There's going to be bumps along the road. And it doesn't make our marriage bad or our sex life unhealthy, right? So in those times where couples can't partake in sexual intimacy, whether it be because they're dating and saving themselves for marriage, or in marriage postpartum or practicing NFP, whether there's a medical condition or something preventing, you know, a couple from having sex, how can people work through those tough situations, and how can they still work on growing closer together, even though, you know, that is a really good way to grow close together?
I think the first is for the whatever spouse is the spontaneous arousal spouse. Mm-hmm. Usually it's the male, but that's, I think, only 80% of the time. Whoever the spontaneous arousal spouse is, they need to keep in mind that their need, their desire to have sex is not a need that needs to be fulfilled. Mm. They'll be okay. They won't combust and die. So like they just need to know that. Right. But I think for couples to continue to grow closer during whatever the time of abstinence is, and for whatever reason, one thing that we've come to appreciate is our play personalities. That's something that we mentioned in the book. We didn't come up with it. There's researchers, and a researcher that Brené Brown researched with, like,
nice,
got us onto this. But each couple or each individual person has a way that they prefer to play. And for a lot of adults, actually, like, we don't play often because, like, there's so much responsibility around us. We're constantly stressed. And if we find ways to play within our day, like, things are just lighter. And it's the same as kids having, being able to play, like, just things are more fun throughout the day. Things are lighter. And if you could find a way to play with your spouse, you will connect in a very different level because you're just doing something that's fun. And it doesn't mean like going out and necessarily playing a sport or playing a game, but finding different ways that they enjoy playing. So one of my ways of playing is watching movies. Like I love watching movies. And I don't just watch movies for entertainment, but like I really get into the story. I know every character. I know what, like, I like envision myself and I can superimpose my family to different characters. And Monica's come to appreciate the way I watch movies. So like she watches them with me occasionally as a way of playing with me. And that's something that like we've done as a way of growing closer together. That's not sexual.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And a line that we try to go back to all the time is that sex is intimate, but intimacy is not just sex. So there to just really pursue other ways of being intimate, play personalities, love languages, like all of these are just different ways to, again, communicate about this. But to really just focus on, like, why are you my favorite person? Why are you the person that I'm picking? If you're dating, why are you the person I'm picking to be with right now? Mm-hmm. Engaged and married, why are you the person I'm picking to be with for the rest of my life? And like focus on those things. And again, when the time comes back around, or when you do get married, like you said before, that will only enhance your sexual experience as well, the more intimate that you are outside of the bedroom.
Yeah. That's so great. I have never heard of the play personalities before, but I think that makes so much sense. And it makes me, it's like such a sweet way, like an innocent way to connect with your best friend, like you said. And I'm like realizing that we sometimes do that, but I didn't know we were doing that. But like, we both have different hobbies, my husband and I. And he's really into this painting hobby. And some nights if he's like watching a video on how to paint a certain thing, I'll like watch it with him and get really into it and ask him to show me like what he's thinking of doing next. And he gets so excited about it. And then it makes me happy. And I'm like, okay, this is great. And then vice versa, he'll get really into something I'm excited about. And so it's a really great way to keep the curiosity going and pursuit, even though it's not sexual pursuit, which I think is great. So I want to talk about a chapter in your book that is titled Grace Before Intimacy, basically talking about how sex with your spouse is meant to bring you closer to Jesus ultimately. It's a part of your lived vocation. Can you talk about that idea? I think it's really, really interesting, and I'd love to hear more about it.
So the re we wanted to put that chapter in there at the end, both as a one as a reminder to couples that like our marriage reflects God's love for his people, so that if we can get our marriage and our intimacy right, we become a sign to the world of like how much God loves them, and just giving us that, giving them that responsibility and that awareness of like, this is what you're striving for. You're not striving just to connect with your spouse, but you're striving to be a sign to the world. And then the majority of the chapter then also just shifts to how like God's spousal love is revealed through the sacred scripture. So in the Old Testament, but then also revealed in the New Testament, in the Gospels, Jesus calling himself the bridegroom, saying, John the Baptist announcing Jesus to the world, like a best man announces the groom. Jesus using spousal language at the Last Supper, saying that he's going off to prepare a place for his disciples. That's very similar to that. The language he's using there is the language that, similar to in Jewish weddings, they'd have the wedding in the marriage in two different parts. One would be the legal part, and then after they're married legally in the ancient Jewish wedding, the husband would then go out and build a home, and then go
Oh,
come
wow.
back to his get his beloved, and then bring her to the home, and then they would consummate there. And that would be the second part of the wedding. So, or sorry, second part of the marriage. So when Jesus tells us at the Last Supper that he's going to go off to prepare a place for us, like he's
Oh.
using spousal language. And then I think I also mentioned Revelation, like this, the wedding supper of the Lamb, like that's our wedding banquet. That's our wedding feast that Christ is throwing for us, his bride. So not only should your marriage be a sign to the world, but also it should be a reminder of how intimate God wants to get into your life and and Jesus wants to be one flesh with you. And that's what we ultimately receive in the Eucharist. So it's just putting that all together so that marriage and ultimately we put it together in the book because we don't want the book to be just a self-help on how to have better sex. Like, yes, that's part of it. But that's not the reason to have good sex just because you want to have good sex with your spouse. Like, there's plenty of secular books that could do that, but ultimately, like, this is supposed to help you with your marriage so that you could be a sign, and then your marriage so that you could be closer to Jesus. And that was the main, the ultimate goal of it is so that we could have better relationships with Christ.
That's awesome. I've never heard that parallel. That kind of just blew my mind.
That's awesome.
Really beautiful. Okay, so I have to ask, any inspiration or advice for someone out there listening who might be, struggling in, the dating scene, or are struggling in engagement, or are newly married and trying to figure things out? What would be a piece of advice or inspiration that you guys would give those people?
I mean, like I have a lot of different pieces of advice. So
Totally.
one would be that, like, kind of like Renzo was saying, and I don't want to categorize like human formation and then spiritual formation, because again, the whole point of what we're trying to do is to put those two things together. But if you truly, really like, if you really feel like you're struggling, and I keep trying, but I'm not getting it right, is to really pursue the sacraments, because our humanness is always going to fall short. And so the more that we invite God in, the more that we cooperate with his grace, the more things are going to be transformed, because it's not just us. So if you're not yet married, and even if you are, but like going to the sacrament of confession, frequent mass, go to daily mass if you can. Something I learned way too late in life is the offertory part of the mass is actually supposed to be us offering our whole lives, and like just giving ourselves as we are, to
Uniting or offering?
uniting our offering.
Offering or
Excuse
presence.
me. Yes. Theology. But I didn't realize I had a
Right.
part in
That's,
it. I guess is the
totally.
point. Is I was like, okay, great. The bread is coming. Like, but in that moment, we are supposed to participate in where we're at. Like whether we are a turtle dove or a prized ram, like wherever we are, And I think to not to like to not bypass that part of like God wants us as we are, and that is a good sacrifice to like really authentically just to do that. And then another like a human piece of advice would be to really to start to look into yourself. Our old pastor, who's now retired, this again was like, it's so silly and simple, but when he said it for the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so right. But every time we point fingers, you point a finger at somebody else, remember how many fingers are pointing back at you. And so, you know, we feel like we're struggling with our fiance or our spouse or our boyfriend or girlfriend, and they surely probably have some part in this situation, but like, maybe I should look first at myself and how am I contributing to this? And where are things that I can work on? What area of communication is falling short on my end? And to work on that, and that often that humility inspires the other to also take a chill pill and work right. on themselves a little bit too. Often.
Nice. Renzo, anything from you? Last piece of advice.
So truthfully, for me, it'd be you just keep going. Because I think there's so much there, especially I think in this time, like there's a lot of temptation to despair, regardless of what stage of life you're in. When things are hard, it's just the temptation to like, this is never going to work out, and just think all the negative things. Maybe that's my own melancholicness, but like there's just the desire to like just be like, this isn't what it's supposed to be. It must not be God's will. But continue to like, if you're pursuing the Lord and you're pursuing Him through the sacraments, just keep going and trust that like things will work out for your good, because the Lord said that. Like the Lord, we have to trust at some point and really give all of ourselves to Him, and just like whether it's putting our vocation or our marriage, you know, or our dating life, whatever, giving it up to Him and just being willing to give it up and be like, that's not the most important thing. You are the most important thing, Lord, and whatever you will is what I will happily receive. Like I think getting to that point is important. And like, it's not easy. I struggle with that myself, but I do think that if you're tempted with despair and tempted like, this isn't going to work out, just keep going. The Lord is there, and he's going to take care of you.
Yeah. It's great advice. Gotta keep fighting the good fight. I love it. Okay. So for our listeners also, where can people find you guys? Where can they connect with you? Find your book? Plug all the things you'd like to right now.
So our apostolate is called To Become Family, TWO, Become Family. We're on Instagram with that handle. Our website is To Become Family. Our Gmail is To Become Family.
It's easy.
Yeah, we have a Substack, all the good stuff. So you can find us there. Under that name, our podcast is on Spotify, Apple, wherever you find podcasts, also called To Become Family. And our book is available. If you order it through Ave Maria Press and use the code LOVE10, you'll get a 10% discount. You can also order it from Barnes & Noble or Amazon. So if you have gift cards, you can go there. So it's published through Ave Maria Press, and it's lovemaking. If you are searching on Amazon, also write Ortega after the word lovemaking, because I'm not entirely sure what will come up when you search for that alone.
Yeah.
But you should be good if you go right to Ave.
That's a good tip. Yeah. Nice. Okay, awesome. Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah. It was such a pleasure.
If you enjoyed this episode of After Cana, share it with a friend, leave a review, or head to the Ferris Love website for more resources on building relationships and families of faith.